We're missing a couple, but let's go ahead and restart. I need to figure out how to change something here on the screen. April, why don't you go ahead and get started?
Okay, this is Agenda Paper 3. You received a request to clarify the accounting for long-term supply contracts for raw materials when the purchaser of the raw material agrees to make prepayments to the supplier. And the question considered was whether the purchaser should accrete interest on long-term prepayments by recognizing interest income, which would result in an increase in the cost of inventories and ultimately the cost of sales. The guidance in IFRS 15, Revenue from Contracts with Customers, is relevant to this question. In February 2012, when discussing this, you thought that the principles regarding the time value of money in the seller's financial statements are similar to those in the purchaser's financial statements, and at their meeting in February 2012, the ISB agreed with you. This topic was placed on hold until IFRS 15 was finalized in May 2014. And that standard requires that if a contract with a customer contains a significant financing component, it should be reported separately as interest, income, or expense. Consequently, we think it's now clear that if a long-term supply contract contains a significant financing component, that financing component should be recognized separately. At the November meeting, you asked us to conduct outreach to collect evidence about whether these long-term supply contracts include a financing component or whether the purchaser made the prepayment for other reasons. Now, we were only able to identify one such entity, and we had a detailed discussion with that respondent. The entity was a European preparer in a high technology sector. They entered into these long-term contracts with the supplier in order to secure future supplies of silicon, which was then in scarce supply, and the entity does not accrete interest on the prepayments. We also asked the Global Preparers Forum about this type of transaction. Two members said that they thought this type of transaction was very unusual now, although it had been more common previously. On such a small sample, we're unable to draw conclusions about whether this type of transaction is widespread, whether there's diversity in practice, or whether the diversity that was identified in 2011 is due to there being two types of long-term contracts, one that contains a financing component and another that does not, or whether the effect of recognizing any financing component separately as interest would be material to that entity. In the absence of evidence about the issue and details of the facts and circumstances relating to these types of transactions, it's difficult to see how we can address this topic efficiently and effectively. Consequently, we think that the issue doesn't meet our agenda criteria, and we therefore recommend that the topic is removed from the Interpretation Committee's agenda. And on page 7, we ask you whether you agree with the staff recommendation to remove the topic and whether you agree with the wording of the tentative agenda decision in Appendix A.
Comments? Bruce?
I agreed with the view of the staff, and I agreed with the tentative decision. I guess the only comment I'd had just was when we talk about the tentative decision, we refer to IFRS 15. I just wondered if we shouldn't rather refer to the IS 2 stuff. I just thought that Para 18 of IS 2 to me was a little bit more on point in the context of this question. But other than that, I agreed with the staff view.
Philippe?
Just a question. Assuming there would be a basis for taking on the agenda, I don't disagree with not taking it, but let's assume we take it on. Do you think IFRS 15, which treats the issue from the perspective of the supplier, i.e. the interest income for the supplier, would be a sufficient basis to do mirror accounting for the purchaser, which would have an interest expense? And the logics tell me yes, but the pure standard setting activity let me to ask, do we have a sufficient basis to do, as a general principle, mirror accounting using another standard?
This was discussed in January 2011 by the IFRIC, who thought that the principles were the same. And that thinking was confirmed by the board at a meeting in February 2012. So I think the principle is sort of something which has been accepted in the past.
Okay, let's go start to make the circuit, but let's start with Bonnie this time, since we've been going the other direction.
I have a similar comment to what Philippe said, and I think I brought that up to April yesterday, that the paragraphs, at least in 2, 16, and 38, talk about deferrals, not necessarily prepayments, and I think it needs to be clarified that it covers both sides so that you do get the parity in the accounting between the seller and the purchaser. I also think that there may be situations where, just because the books of the world don't always balance, people have different interpretations about when there's a significant financing component or not. I do think there could be some differences, but I think from a conceptual perspective, that needs to be clear. I also thought, just maybe a minor comment on the wording, that we need to reference that the outreach has been recent, since this is an issue back from 2011. I think we need to be clear about when we've done the outreach and kind of what our conclusion is based on the recent outreach that we've done, that we didn't see many of these transactions, whereas 4 years ago, apparently there were more, which is what caused the question in the first place.
Andrew?
Yeah, my comments are in the same area. I don't quite understand what the intent of the reference to IFRS 15 is. We don't say, for example, that you could apply that aspect of IFRS 15 by analogy, or you must apply it by analogy. I certainly don't think we can expect the cost of inventory to be measured in the same way the supplier would measure the revenue under IFRS 15, with all the variable consideration guidance and everything else that's in there. So neither the scope nor the intent of that reference is clear to me.
Tony?
Very similar thoughts. So I agree with the decision not to take it onto the agenda. I was left after reading the reference to IFRS 15 with a sort of a so what question. Now, I actually agree that the notion in IFRS 15 is relevant, together with the notions in IS 2, IS 16, IS 38, because they all tell me that you should be accounting for a significant financing component if there is a significant financing component in the arrangement. I agree with Bonnie that people might look at that differently, but when I read that reference to IFRS 15, I thought, so what? And I just thought, if that's the point we're making, then we ought to go on, whether we reference IS 2, IS 16, IS 38 as well, but just say that if there is a significant financing component, then it should be accounted for.
Bob?
Similar thoughts. I agree with not taking this on. But I think the submitter is then, you know, in the submission is really asking two questions. One question is, if there is a financing component, do I have to accrete? And the second is, well, how do I identify whether I have a financing component? The second question, I agree, we can't take. I mean, there's just so many facts and circumstances. Although I would note, in the, and I wasn't here, but in the November update, it does note a situation where the interpretation committee did identify where there might be one, is when there's a difference between the price you would pay today and the price that you, or the price you would pay tomorrow and the price that you prepaid. And that's not including the tentative decision. Where I struggled was, or in the agenda decision commentary, where I struggled was, it's the first question is, do I need to accrete? Because I didn't see that specifically addressed or as strong as I thought it should be in the agenda decision. The staff makes some pretty strong statements in paragraphs 18 and 21 of the paper, saying that it is clear in IFRS that if you identify a financing component, that you should accrete. I guess I kind of then expected to kind of see that in the agenda decision.
Martin?
Yeah, I mean, if one read the staff paper, what the question I ask myself is the motivation relevant at all for the accounting judgment? So is the motivation that I do a kind of upfront payment for future supply relevant in terms how I or whether I calculate for an interest rate portion or not? And I guess inherent there is always these kinds of calculation. I have paid a certain upfront payment, so therefore in future I also would like to see that effect on pricing. My personal view on that is that these kinds of upfront payments are done because one have a kind of risk sharing with the one who is investing in a production facility and the other one who is finally purchasing a part or significant part of the output. I'm not talking about IFRIC 4 topics. So specifically for vertically integrated industry, this might be of certain relevance. If you have a pipe-to-pipe connection and you want and you say, oh, I need more of that input, it's a bad for you, but it's a good for me, so please do a debottlenecking. And therefore, here you have a certain amount of money. So is this decisive or not? I do not agree with the reverse interpretation of IFRS 15 necessarily, because also in other areas where we have upfront payments, for example, think in terms of foreign currency. If I do an upfront payments in terms of foreign currency, I do not have any currency fluctuations later on. So the question is, do I really have to separate the interest component, yes or no? Another accounting approach could probably be to see the difference between the net present value and the nominal value of the amount paid as a kind of purchase right. I also heard companies talking about this accounting treatment. If we come to the conclusion that we do not take this topic on the agenda, I would prefer to have a wording which is flexible enough that everyone could keep its accounting policy. that's true. I either refer to IFRS 15, which I believe is wrong in doing that, in giving that statement, because we are not talking about the seller, we are talking about the accounting for the purchaser. That was also mentioned by Philippe. I believe if we really intend to do that, then we need to add some more wordings and probably have an interpretation on the issue. If we come up with a non-agenda decision, then we should not refer to IFRS 15, and then we should leave the topic more or less open as it is, with the argumentation that with regard to the outreach, we have seen no material issues. I have some doubts on that, but anyhow, that would be then the overall conclusion.
Sandy?
I think my comments are similar to what others have made, and that I agree with not taking it on. The so what question with respect to IFRS 15, the question that Bob raised about the difference in the price today and the price tomorrow. What I thought was interesting about the submission is it only convinced me that the interest rate should be higher because of the risk sharing and investment risk, i.e. is this debt or is this closer to equity pricing? So I guess my comments are pretty similar to others.
Chong-Soo, and then I do have an addition.
All right. My suggestion is very similar to Martin's suggestion, not to include IFRS 15's remarks on the tentative agenda decision. But my logic is a little bit different. What I'm thinking is that the IFRS 15 is not effective yet. But by writing it in the agenda decision, we are kind of suggesting that the company has to follow IFRS 15, even if the company does not use it. So in that sense, what I suggest is not to include this paragraph and just clearly state that we are not having much evidence of the widespread usage of the standard. So we conclude not to recommend any decisions.
Two observations. One, this topic was addressed at the recent Emerging Economies Group meeting in Mexico City, both because the main topic for that meeting was present value-based measurements. It had to arise there. Also because of a paper that was put forward by the Russian delegation that addressed the accounting for a number of debits that weren't addressed by any other standard. My recollection, and we don't keep detailed minutes of those discussions, but my recollection was that people said, yeah, there are lots of prepayments ranging all the way from lease deposits to a variety of other supply-type deposit agreements. But it was sometimes difficult to determine whether or not those were financings or something else, which is the frustration that this issue has had all along. With regard to the reference to 15, you don't have to. I don't know of any part of IFRS in which there is something that's identified as a significant financing agreement component, and the standard says, oh, but don't worry about that. IAS 16
to 38,
all of them say if there's significant financing, account for it as financing. Pardon me? Well, but that's not an asset. Yet. Yet. Income tax is arguable, but you know, anything else except for the ones that people have just pointed out to me, there are lots of precedents in which there's a significant financing component and the standard says account for the significant financing component. So why don't we just say that? We don't have to refer to 15. We just say this is a common feature of most of our standards and go with it on that basis.
Although the discussions in 2012, we decided to suspend work until IFRS 15 was finalized because we thought that was fundamental to the treatment.
Well, but...
Because that's the only example where you're accreting. In the other cases, the assumption is that the payment will be deferred, because it's not usual to finance your suppliers.
Bruce.
So I was just going to say, I think we've just got to be careful with that, because I mean, I know that last year sometime we had the same discussion when we were joking about IFRS 15 being the new de facto conceptual framework for everything we do. You know, and I just, we've got to be careful with that. You know, I mean, I think that you're right. What we're saying here, and my concern about this is we've got to be very careful we're not turning around saying, well, what we actually believe in is symmetrical accounting. We start saying that, I think that's going to open up a can of worms we don't want to address.
Bonnie?
Yes, when I went back to look at the paragraphs in IS's 2, 16, and 38, it talks very much about a deferral, which would be interest expense, which is intuitive to me. The opposite for prepayment is interest income, which is not intuitive to me, which is why I didn't agree with the time value of money concept in IFRS 15. Different issue, but and I think that's the concept at least that I struggled with, and that's the clarification to me that needs to be made, is that it goes on both sides from the purchaser's perspective. The seller's accounting is the seller's accounting, that's an IFRS 15. If we believe that the purchaser's accounting in those paragraphs and the referred to IIS's covers both the deferral and prepayments, that to me is the clarification that needs to be made.
Martin?
Yeah, same direction as Bonnie, because I mean, I have something on deferred payments, but not on upfront payments. Yeah. And as already said, I have other, and I only have this example with the exchange rates. Yeah, when you do an upfront payment in a foreign currency, you have no exchange rate effects later on this upfront payment. However, if you have a deferred payment, then and you have the obligation to pay, you have a different measurement attitude to it. So therefore, I believe this symmetry, which we would imply in referring to IFRS 15, does not really exist. If we want to introduce something, we have to prepare something for amendment, interpretation or something, or otherwise we leave it open.
Are you suggesting, just to make it clear, if I have a transaction and I say, well, you pay me 10 today, or when I deliver this to you in 6 months, you can pay me 20. Mm-hmm. Did I just ignore the fact that I paid 10 today and I get 20 of value in 6 months? I just ignore that?
It depends why you're doing
yeah.
that. if it,
I mean, that's where, I
guess there was one of the papers, and I don't remember which one of the previous papers, the way that some of the discussion was worded seemed to imply that if there is a difference, it's by default, or the presumption is that that's a financing, and I guess there can be other operational reasons as to why you might do that. So, and I guess that's where I made the comment earlier that what a seller may think is a financing and what a purchaser may think is a financing, yes, it's two parties negotiating, but they may be doing it for different reasons. Do I have an example? No, I don't. But, I mean, there two sides often look at transactions slightly differently. Generally, you should get the books of the world to balance. You should be accounting for them, the nature of them, in a similar way. But I guess that's where I have a little bit of an issue with referring only to IFRS 15 when really you should be looking at the existing standards.
Gary?
It, just something Bonnie said, just kind of thought, one reason you're paying 10 now or 20 later, I mean, maybe that's too extreme of, you know, 100% markup, but companies pay a lot in advance to secure positions in production, to secure favorable operating treatment. I mean, it, you buy your slot, if you're ordering an airline, you might be 5 years in advance, but if you want that slot guaranteed, you pay now. It, or the same time is, like, I'd just soon sell the stuff now because there's all sorts of ancillary services and consumables that go with it. Therefore, it's cheaper for me to discount it now and get 6 months of other revenue and services from it than to wait for 6 months. So you don't get exposed positions. I mean, there's all sorts of reasons, none of which have to do with financing. So I can go on and on for a long period of time, I think, of why you might do these things for operational purposes, little to do with financing.
None of that says you shouldn't account for a significant financing component when there is one.
Right, that's right. I'm just saying there's a lot of reasons why there is not one, even though pay me 10 now or 20 later might seem like one. But it's no different buying an airline ticket for 8 months from now today and as opposed to a week before you need it for the same flight. It's going to be a very different ticket. You get the supply-demand equations come into place. And so I'm just saying, here, if there is a significant finance, I agree with you. I'm saying there's many, many reasons and not hard to articulate why it's not a finance.
I guess that's what I wouldn't want to sort of pass on and not confirm that you should account for one where one exists. It's just that judgment is needed to determine whether or not a significant
finance
component
exists. If you identify one,
you should
account for it as such, but we're not telling you how to identify
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
That valid point.
But that borderline might be critical.
If you, your example was quite straight. You have a clear link between the payment now and the purchase later on. However, in general, what you do is you have a kind of purchase right to buy a certain volume. A certain volume is not that defined that it is 1-to-1. It could be a range between 100 and 500. So do you then have a significant financing component, or is it more a kind of purchase option? So therefore, I believe it's very, very challenging to identify it. And to enforce it.
And that's why IFRS 15 is helpful.
Yeah.
Because it gives you the guidance around deciding whether or not a significant financing component exists. I wouldn't have the reference in there to tell you to account for it. I'd have the reference in because it gives you a good framework to think about whether there is a significant financing component.
So,
I just wanted to back what Wayne said, which is that I think that we do take this sort of accounting for time value of money very seriously in IFRS. So I think that the idea of accounting for a financing component, no matter which direction it works in, is something that underlies our thinking. So I agree with that. I think it's all a question of whether you think that it is a financing component or whether something else is going on. So you can have circumstances where you think that something else is going on, and if you were applying 15, it would say have a look at what you think that other thing is and decide whether the difference in pricing is commensurate with that or is it a financing component, and it gives you a framework. But I think also, you know, we can't over rely on 15. It gives some useful pointers, and also I think we need to be a little bit careful not to start bandying around significant financing component too much, because that is a specific IFRS 15 concept that was put in as a simplification. So we probably just need to watch for that a little bit.
Carl, Charlotte, and Reinhardt.
My sense is rational business decisions will always involve financing components regarding time value of money. It can be significant or not, and we have a proper accounting direction to apply in each situation. We are more than 3 years with this issue. We don't have sufficient evidences. It is widespread. If there is diversity in practice, I really believe we should finalize this topic at this meeting.
Charlotte?
I agree with the first part of what Carl said. My assumption is that in a long-term prepayment or long-term anything, there is a financing component. It may not be the only thing going on. There may be things that actually counter it, and so you've got to look at the overall picture. But I think if the if you calculate your finance component and it adds up to your price difference, I mean, I think that's where I would start from, looking for the calculating the cost of financing or the income from financing. I have to say, back in 2014 or 2012, whenever this came, I've seen these in practice, and I'm just surprised there are more coming up in the research. They are prevalence, probably the wrong word, but in the commodities space, there are a lot of them, and it's a way of financing without showing interest from both sides. So, which would to me mean it should be something that's sorted out, because it's just as much an interest as borrowing money or lending money.
Reinhardt?
I agree with the comments made by others that there's judgment in terms around whether there's a significant financing component. But if it is clear that the reason for entering into the transaction was a financing, that it would be consistent to accrete. My only concern is, as we've talked about, there may be multiple reasons as to why you enter it. There may be a financing component, there may be a component for securing supply. And so the question then is, do you have to bifurcate and figure out what you're paying for? And I don't think we would want to get into that level of complexity. And if we were to put in anything, just suggest if the primary reason was, a financing, then to recognize that. But as I say, I would want to stay away from being too prescriptive, because there, as I think some of the earlier outreach suggested, there were multiple reasons for making an upfront payment, and trying to get too precise to bifurcate that upfront payment may be difficult.
Mikhail, last call.
Sorry, I missed the part of the arguments there, but I would say that I think this is a very theoretical way of thinking of this. And I can understand the idea of having the interest rate component on both ways, so to speak, the financing component here. But first of all, we are using IFRS 15, that is for revenue, and we are now applying that analogy in a lot of different areas, in the IS 12, IS 37, 21 last time, and now also in IS 2. And to my understanding, we have in IS2 rules around this when we defer payment on the cost side, so to speak. We have also rules in IS23 when it comes to asset, when you should adjust for an asset value and add on capitalized interest. And you have their rules around what is qualifying assets. But also then, of course, talking about revenue, there is no cash flow. We have no cash flow connected to this interest revenue that will then be recognized. We will have a revenue that is earlier than the cost side. We will increase the equity. We will be able to dividend out money that does not exist. It's just a accounting entry, so to speak. So if I understand the theory, so to speak, that and it looks nice, I think there are a number of other reasons why we should have certain principles and rules, and with prudence and the difficulties to have highly virtuous certain recognition of this receivable and interest. So I think this will be very theoretical, very difficult for for people understanding this account.
Okay, let me see if I can capture it. I heard a lot of people who are uncomfortable with the analogy to 15. Sufficiently so, so let's take that off the table for the moment. I heard a lot of people say there are lots of reasons why you would do this. Gary used the example of an option. Of course, an option always has a significant financing component. It's inherent in the option pricing model. Try to buy that airplane a day before and you find that out. But I think there was a broad acknowledgement that there are other reasons for doing these things. Tony, I think, captured a view, which was if you see a significant financing component, you ought to be able to recognize it when you see it. And if you see it, account for it. And just stop there. Does that capture your view of it, Tony?
Yes, there's one account for it.
So that would be my proposal to the group. If you see a significant financing component inherent in one of these things, then you account for it as financing. If you don't, account for it as something else. Is that, how many would support that?
Seven.
Okay.
And John's on the phone.
John?
Yes.
You'd support my.
I would support that.
Okay. Now, Philippe, board member privilege.
Yeah, but what would be the encore? Because IS2 speaks only about a deferred payment, not a prepayment. So there is no reference in IS2 to a prepayment. I financing by the purchaser to the supplier. So you have to infer that IS2 has an implicit symmetry, symmetric principle, which is just an assumption. This symmetry principle is in IFRS 15, not in IS2. Hence, the reason why April wanted to bring in IFRS 15, where you have the symmetry principle, not in IS2.
Right,
so can you skip IFRS 15 to say if there is a financing component by the purchaser to the supplier, then you must account for it. Can you skip it?
When we did the analysis in November, you may remember that we pointed out that IS2, 16 and 38 all deal with where you have deferred payment terms. And we took that as being an indication that it's unusual to finance your supplier. That's the more usual basis. It was in IFRS 15 that we first came into the idea. And that, I think, is why in 2012, when IFRIC and the ISB discussed this, they thought that there was symmetry between the two. And that's why we waited until IFRS 15 was finalized to come to a conclusion on this, because that's the first example of an accretion. And it's also, of course, the board's more recent thinking than IS2, 16 and 38, which are rather old standards.
Not rather old, they're really old. Okay, let's try this again. How many would object to including IFRS 15 in the rationale?
Six in the room,
John.
On condition that we also include IS2, IS16, and IS38 in the rationale.
Yes. The
question was whether you object to it.
Well, the answer to that question is yes, I do, if we don't include references to the other three standards.
Oh, I agree. I have a good point. Tony?
I'm very happy with that as a solution, but just one observation, I think, in particularly to respect the views of Martin and Mikhail, Bonnie and Carl. I think it will be helpful to say that judgment's required to decide whether there is a significant financing component.
Oh, I thought that was inherent in there.
I think that will be helpful. Yeah.
Okay, well, we had 6.5 people who objected to including 15. I count John as a half. We had 7 people who, I think, agreed with Tony's articulation.
Eight.
Yes. So I think Tony's articulation is what we go with.
Thank you.
It is tentative.
It is
yes,
tentative, yeah.
So you can get your comment letter ready.
Can you think of anybody that will object?